Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to the Victor Family Victor Marco Radio Show.
Hey, folks, it's time for the show.
Welcome.
Now, here's your host for all this craziness, Jack Hatfield.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, people all over the planet. You are here at Fix the Family, Fix America Radio. Wow, we are big time today, ladies and gentlemen. Big time, and a good St. Patrick's Day to you. And a good St. Patrick's Day to you today. That's right. This is Fix the Family, Fix America. I am your humble host, Jack Hatfield. Field right here for you. And remember, Confucius said, to put the world right in order, we must first put the nation in order. To put the nation in order, we must first put the family in order. To put the family in order, we must first cultivate our personal life. That's right. We do it right here every week. Fix the Family, Fix America Radio, the fastest growing family talk radio show in all of the universe. Thank you for being here. I cannot thank everyone enough again for doing their homework. Because let me tell you, we have quadrupled our listeners every week of this year since we've doubled the size. And the homework we give everyone is a simple task. It's everyone you see, you should tell them to listen to the show. And that means every single person you see with your eyes, you must find a way to get up to them, tell them to listen to this show. It includes getting in your car, wrecking into them, grabbing people in malls, whatever it takes. You have to tell them to listen to this show. On Blog Talk Radio, right here, Fix the Family, Fix America. Now we do, and we are, fixing the family, fixing America by our exclusive 4+1 method. That's right, it includes positive fathering. That's very, very, very important. Make a difference mothering, all bigger importance. Pull through parenting and finally reveal your success. The plus one is disease. And the diet, where we are stopping, preventing, and curing, and showing you the ways that degenerative diseases will not affect your family. Ladies and gentlemen, this is crucial. And let me tell you, we've got some big stuff on the line. We've got some big stuff coming up. This show is about to radically change as we get more and more input from the vast number of listeners that are starting to listen to us. They're saying that first of all, they love the Adele Omani's interview. So she's going to be on the show every week, starting next week with her Magnificence Minute. I, of course, cannot say it with her lovely, lovely accent, but we'll be able to hear her voice and not my gyrating, grating, raspy stuff. And then we're also hopefully going to have Dr. Z, mysterious doctor, one of my friends who's going to have health news from a doctor's point of view. That will add some more enlightenment from how doctors are seeing the world in a different light as well, because he is very well trying to get people to be involved in their own health, and that is important. We'll hope to have a new sponsor, a couple new sponsors coming up. I mean, like I say, the show is growing leaps and bounds, backwards and forwards, all kind of mega stuff. Let me tell you, this is amazing. So on tap today, tonight, depending on when you're listening to the show, we have a lot of live listeners, but let me tell you, I have to be honest, we have a lot more non-live listeners. That means you listen to the archived version throughout the week as we go along, and that's perfectly fine, as long as you listen. See, that's the key. If you're listening to this on a Saturday night at 4 o'clock, you go tell everybody you need to listen at Saturday night at 4 o'clock. If you're listening to this at Wednesday at 2 a.m., you tell everybody to listen to Wednesday 2 a.m. Plus, it probably means you don't have a job. You're one of the unemployed, and we understand, and we're trying to help you. That's another reason why we're here. We are making people grasp their inner responsibility, grasp their inner can-do spirit, and get out there and make it happen. And that's my goal, is to make as many people successful as possible. And not only successful in your own life, once you do that, then your families will have success. Once you do that, then the nation will have success. And once you do that, the world will have success. But right now, we must. I would be remiss if I do not talk about this at all. Devastating, absolutely amazing tragedy that has hit Japan. I must say that is wrenching to look at. The pictures are amazing. I wish every one of them all the best. But you know what I also notice? And this is something big. When we have disasters of that magnitude in America, there's reports of looting, devastation, people screaming. You don't see those pictures. You do see night. No pushing, no shoving. Every person there trying to help the next person. It's absolutely amazing to witness what's happening. And then you say, well, wow, I mean, they're going through some tough stuff. And they're doing it with such decorum. There's a chapter in my second book where what it did was highlight someone that can never be satisfied, such as you had some Katrina victims that were upset that the buses or evacuations wasn't enough or fast enough or done correctly, okay? Valid points. Not saying they're invalid or anything like that. I'm just saying that you had some people that complained. Then you had the exact same people complain when the next hurricane was predicted to hit that they called for the evacuation, you know, like a week early. Or 3 days early. Or something like that. And you have those people complaining, they don't even know it's going to hit us. And they're telling us to leave. Which is it? Is there? What's the perfect time? What's perfect to you? I mean, what would make it to where you go, yeah, it's all right, I'll leave. It's a good time for me to tell me to leave. My guess is when you agree. Now understand, Japan got no warning. There wasn't a hurricane out there for miles and miles and miles with 30 different scenarios of which direction it would go. They got hit with an earthquake, a 9.0. and a massive tsunami that happened after the tectonic plates of Earth shifts. But yet every one of them is looking to their fellow man and going, can I help you? How can I help? Yes, there's an outpouring from other nations and all kinds of things are happening from the outside world. But, I mean, just look at the decorum from this tragedy. I'm going to be looking into this really deeper because the decorum of how this is happening and how they're approaching this and their attitude towards fixing and repairing. You look at, we have the bombing of New York and we still don't have a building built back. I guarantee you that Japan will be building very soon. They'll be back on their feet in no time. I mean, just look at how the citizens are reacting now. They're cleaning up. They're getting over it. There's the, okay, this has happened. You know, now what happens next? We got to make sure we're all in the clear. Then we start cleaning it up and making it good, making it right again. Remember, Japan had a very similar earthquake in 18-something, 1800s, the late 1800s. Lots of devastation, but then lots of repair, lots of new. Things don't stay the same. There's another chapter in my book that's reminding me of this, and that's, you know, change is the norm. Change is the norm. So I look at this. I look at Japan. I look at this devastation. Again, my heart, all of the Fix the Family, Fix America goes out to them. And let me tell you, if we can do our part, we will fix the family, fix Japan. Because we're not only Fix Family, Fix Marriage, we're Fix the Family, Fix the Planet. Because as we start the show, every time, to put the world right in order. Okay? So it starts with a person, then family, then nation, then world. And the way I look upon the attitudes, the mechanics, the simple steadfastness of the Japanese people while they're going through this is amazing. And it will be very soon that they will cultivate their personal life, their family is going to be fine, and they'll work to put their nation back in order. So for that, we are really, really pleased to see that. And again, we would be remiss if we do not talk about that for just 1 minute. But I want you to think about that in the back of your mind. Look at the tragedies and the differences. Look at the pictures. I mean, they still have nuclear facilities with emergency situations. It's not just, you know, stop and go cleanup time now. They still have to deal with other things. But they're doing it with a great attitude, with a great, just a get-down, can-do attitude. And it's amazing. Now, yeah, there's been some cries, but I mean, look, they find survivors every day, and unfortunately they find some dead every day. But I tell you what, they're really, really working on it. And I'm proud of them. Proud of them. So, I wanted to talk about that first. I wanted to make sure everyone understood. We do, all of our hopes and prayers are with them as we go on here today. Welcome again to Fix the Family, Fix America. Let's talk about some stuff that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about a cop wife. And some of the this is probably one of the worst crimes I could read about. Huh? Pepsi's got a new bottle. What? Coca-Vin coming to hospitals? What are you talking about? Um, We've got a new obesity theory. We've got a recall of some stuff. What about a generation that can't talk? What would that do for us? And then what about feminism? And one author says there's a flip side to feminism no one's talking about. And then for fun, I got 10 habits to ruin your parents, and I got the top 10 worst foods in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, we got a great show for you. So glad you're here. Get ready. Get started. We're on a big, big kick. Fix the Family, Fix America, Jack Hatfield. Thank you for quadrupling again every week this year since we doubled the size of the show. That's absolutely stunning. This is fantastic. I love it. I got absolutely no news on Blue Screen Billy, so that's a good for me. Very good for me. And I'm very pleased. So the simplest little tiny story I've got is that PepsiCo unveiled a bottle made entirely of plant material, okay, which it says now bests the technology of the competitor Coca-Cola, okay? The bottle is made from switchgrass, I don't know what that is, pine bark, I know what that is, corn husk, and other materials. Ultimately, Pepsi also plans to use orange peels, oat hulls, potato scraps, and other leftovers from its food business. Now, it sold off Taco Bell, so there's probably no Taco Bell in there, and if it was, it'd be 88%. Never seen a company more proudly to say, our beef is not all of it. It's very strange. Your hand. Sorry about that. I had to smell something that smelled a lot of fruity, soapy smell. All smell was your hand. All right. Let me take a sip of this libation. You know what this is? This isn't hot tea. This isn't water. This isn't even green juice. You know what color this is? Purple. I'm drinking wine. Let's try the Cabernet Sauvignon. The brand has not paid me to say their name, so I will not. But it's fantastic. Anyway, back to this, Pepsi making stuff from, Taco Bell leftovers or something like that. Anyway, the new bottle looks, feels, and protects the drink exactly the same as the current bottle, says PepsiCo. It's indistinguishable. Okay, so, wait. You're gonna make a bottle, you're gonna talk about it, it's so awesome, but you can't tell any difference from the old bottle. It sounds like a bait and switch to me. I don't know, I'm just saying. Anyway, it's the type of plastic called PET, made entirely of plant-based materials. Coca-Cola uses a bottle that uses 30% plant-based materials. And Coca-Cola said it will be several years before it has a 100% plant bottle that's commercially viable. Pepsi said we've cracked the code. Now, I want y'all to listen carefully to this. Coca-Cola said that it'll be several years before they have a 100% plant bottle that's commercially viable. Well, Pepsi says, we got one right now. The problem is, Pepsi also says, we're going to be testing this product in 2012. That's right. So Coke says it's going to be several years before we got it 100% commercially viable. Pepsi goes that we're going to test it in 2012. So why are you even talking about it? And then guess what? It's going to be a few hundred thousand bottles. And then once the company is sure it can successfully produce the bottle at that scale, it will begin converting all its products over. Now, is that the exact same scenario as Coca-Cola several years? Yes, it is. That's right. But who says it first and who gets the most marketing out of it wins, right? Here's something else cool, people, when y'all are looking and the people that drink Pepsi go, you know what, I love it. All this bottle right here is made out of Taco Bell leftovers and orange peels and pine bark and switchgrass. But guess what? It's supposed to be lightweight, shatterproof, doesn't affect flavors so far in testing, but it is not biodegradable or compostable. What? So you're making a bottle 100% out of nature that won't revert back to nature? How's it 100% nature then, sir? Pepsi, hello, somebody. Can anyone answer that question? Can I answer that question? Yes, I can. It's not! You create a 100% thing out of nature, it will go back to nature. I promise you, if I go and make an orange peel bottle over there, when I peel that orange and I glue it together, it will rot and go back to nature except for the glue. What I'm saying is they have boiled this stuff down and added so many chemicals, it is no longer a natural product. Oh, and the cost? Oh, it says about the same. A little more, but about the same. Okay. Way to go, Pepsi. Way to crack that code to create something out of nature that will not revert back to nature in no way, no how. Do you understand what I just said? These bottles will forever remain on Earth. Unless, of course, we shoot them into space. So, chalk one up for the green Pepsi people bottle thingy. Way to go. Making it out of food scraps, but you get it. Won't go back to food scraps. Nice. Yes. Yes, that's fun. I don't know what I don't know what to say to that. I just wanted you to hear it because there are going to be a lot of, you're going to hear it in the news. Pepsi has a new green bottle, and it's not. So when you hear it, remember that. Okay, here's another cool thing going on. no. Not another, just some cool things. Let me tell you. Hospitals are trying to serve patients better food. That is the headline, I'm telling you. Now, excuse me one second with a little sip here. A veritable bouquet of cab. Hospitals try serving patients better food. That is the headline. Now, when you read in here, what they're trying to say is that the Culinary Institute of America is starting to send students over to Vassar Brothers Medical Center or Sloan Kettering Cancer Center and challenge them to serve people with dietary restrictions and create a higher end hospital food. Okay? Lynn Eddy, teaching food service management and healthcare, says, I want to break the image. I want to embarrass people when they say hospital food. Their food is awful. And I said, let me show you what good food is in a healthcare facility. Mm. Now, food that is both good and nutritious can help patients heal as well as boost their morale. Now, we've said this on this show a million times. Food will heal. Your body can get over it with the right stuff. So, we've often wondered why when you're in the hospital and you're on a dietary restriction, you get this bland, conventional, oil-filled blah. What they always leave out is salt. Or they have to leave out salt and fat. Or they just boil up some veggies. You know it. You've been in the hospital. You've eaten there. Seattle Children's Hospital swapped out white breads and pastas for whole wheat and pumped up its vegetable content. There's a Union Hospital in Maryland buying cage-free eggs, organic produce, and grass-fed beef. Now, why would hospitals suddenly be looking at nutrition as a way to heal What do you think? Hospitals are stressing nutritious and sustainable foods as people become more conscious of the role of food in health, patient experience, and sustainability. What basically hospitals are saying, going, you know, we'll lose our respectability as more people start hearing fix the family, fix America, and disease in the diet. And then they come in here for an operation or something, and we feed them slop on a stick. We're going to lose a little credibility. Guess where the 5-star kitchen in the world of hospital food is? The Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. That's right. One 8-year-old boy on a restricted diet after a bone marrow transplant got pasta carbonara with low-fat milk instead of heavy cream, whole wheat pasta, and turkey bacon. We've went through the turkey bacon here on this show. Another young girl with a bone marrow transplant who mentioned she liked the chain restaurant Moe's was fixed up with sautéed and seasoned black bean dishes with blue chips on the side. The girl loves it. Her parents are grateful. Food helping you heal. Hospitals becoming wise to this fact. Ladies and gentlemen, this is quite odd to mesh the dietary and the medical world, is it not? It's because more and more people are listening to doctors, seeing that it's become a drug-filled industry, and that when they go in for a procedure that's absolutely necessary to happen in a hospital, they get fed slop that they know is not good for them. Credibility gone. And if they lose credibility, what else will they have? What else will they have? But let me tell you about, I want to tell you about a possible sponsor. They're not a sponsor yet, but I want to talk about it. Because I want, right now, you can take care of your own stuff, ladies and gentlemen. You can take care of your own stuff. Meaning you can have lab tests without having to go to your doctor. Okay? You don't need a doctor's order. You don't even need an appointment. You don't need insurance. I'm going to talk about a specific one of these next week, but I just want to talk about it now. Any lab test now is one of the fastest growing franchises. And you can go in there and get you a blood test. You can get you an STD test. You can get tests for males, tests for females, tests for wellness, tests for paternity, tests for drugs. You can find out if you've got the right amount of vitamin D, right amount of vitamin C, right amount of vitamin whatever. Okay, since 2004, any lab test now has grown more than 1,384%. That means there's probably one near you. And the listeners to this show, I know, are some of the smartest in the world, and you can sit there and go, you know what, I feel kind of weird. I'm going to go check my blood and see what I'm lacking and see where my diet needs to be fixed. Take control of your own health. Know yourself. And you can do it right now at any lab test now. Find you a store at anylabtestnow.com. Our sponsor will be a store very close, very soon. But I wanted to talk about that. That is exciting. And I've used them. I've used them because I was trying to find out if I had a H. pylori for an ulcer. And didn't have to go to a doctor. Went walk right in. A pin was shoved into my finger. Blood came out of the tip of my finger. Went into a petri dish where she then burnt the blood to where there was fire coming off of it. And then the purple flame, she captured the gas in a beaker and then suddenly swirled that around on the walls. And then she curled all the lights off and held up a fluorescent black light. And if it shined, I believe if it was chartreuse, then I had H. pylori. And if it was blue, then I was good. That's completely not what happened. Yeah, she did prick my finger. I got some blood, put it in the thing. It said it was like a pregnancy test. It just kept going. The blood, the liquid kept flowing and getting a line. And if it got this second line, then I was positive that I was pregnant. And then if it didn't get the second line, then I wasn't pregnant. And so I walked out of there knowing I wasn't having another kid right now. So I was happy. But I was a little sad because I would have been, you know, the second male to have a child, and I believe that would have been that would have got me on the talk show circuit. That would have been fun, I think. So there. Take your own health into your hands, ladies and gentlemen. You can do this. Ah, yay! Fix the family. America Radio. Now, when she was catching the blue flame from the blood, we're going, wow, that's a lot of stuff for a nurse to do. I bet you that test costs a lot of money. Bet you that test costs a lot of money. Well, here's some big news, you spaghetti meatball lovers. Here's some big news, you spaghetti meatball lovers that are on a diet. See, that's just funny to say right there. You're looking at somebody again. You know what I need? I need spaghetti and meatballs. But I'm trying to lose these last 10 pounds. Where can I get spaghetti and meatballs? It's not going to add girth to my body. So, making myself tear up. I can't see the screen. Goodness. So anyway, this message is very important to all of the men and women out there that cannot get enough spaghetti with meatballs, but are still working on those last few inches of weight that they're trying to get off. Well, Lean Cuisine has you a fantastic spaghetti and meatballs in a hearty tomato sauce with only 270 calories, 6 grams of fat, and 3 grams of fiber. I mean, I am talking, that is big time. Now, I do not know the serving size, but I'm pretty sure it's probably like a fourth of a tablespoon. Anyway, Lean Cuisine has you a very, very good meal, ladies and gentlemen. So spaghetti and meatball lovers that are on the diet, go to Lean Cuisine, go buy it in a hearty tomato sauce, and you also will get a surprise inside. There is some red plastic that is trying to mimic itself as a tomato. Say what now? That's right. Some plastic pieces mimicking tomatoes are in the sauce, in the hearty tomato sauce. And so Nestle Foods, the manufacturer of Lean Cuisine Simple Favorite Spaghetti with Meatballs in a hearty tomato sauce, has been recalled. Now, grasp this. They have recalled 10,000 pounds of spaghetti and meatballs. 10,000 pounds. 5 tons of spaghetti and meatballs because they're worried about plastic as a tomato. All right? Here's what the company said. The recall was limited to 1 hour of production and no other varieties or production dates of Lean Cuisine products were affected. The product was produced in late October. Ladies and gentlemen, this is March. This is St. Patrick's Day. This spaghetti and meatballs was created in late October, and 10,000 pounds of it was created in an hour. 5 tons of spaghetti and meatballs was made in an hour in late October that they're just now getting around to saying, guess what? There's plastic in there. If that is not food on a massive scale, that should make you very nervous if that is really spaghetti with meatballs and a hearty tomato sauce. If they can make 5 tons of it in an hour, put it in boxes way back before Halloween, and just now making it out to you in March. Oh, people west of the Rocky Mountains, don't worry about it. They didn't make it that far. These frozen dinners were sold to stores east of the Rocky Mountains. For those who would like to look at their Lean Cuisine spaghetti with meatballs and hearty tomato sauce in their freezer right now, go to your freezer, grab your package, and the product code will be 0298595519P. That's right. Do not mistake that for the 0724-6947Q. Those are good. I can't get over the fact that they can make 5 tons. 5 tons of spaghetti and meatballs in an hour. How many cows is that? Is there beef in this? Or is this Taco Bell beef where it's only like some? I mean, what's going on? Now, people are going like, dude, man, you used to love Taco Bell. No, I still love Taco Bell. I'm making fun of the fact that they had to come out and say, we're 88% beef, the rest is seasonings. Well, yeah, in the whole. But the beef in the beef is beef. Do you understand that? It's not like they took 88% beef and then seasoned it. They take 100% beef and season it. So as a whole, it turns out to suddenly lower the ratio of beef because they added stuff to it. That's like you making a meatloaf and you going to the dinner table and saying, you know what, guys, this is 80% beef now because I put some peppers in it and some breadcrumbs. And so this isn't 100% beef meatloaf. What? I'm not eating 100% non-beef meatloaf. Well, it's 100% non-beef meatloaf when it's a whole. Get it? When the product is looked at as a whole. But when you back that up, before the meatloaf was meatloaf, there had to be meat, and that meat was 100%. Taco Bell's not getting 88% meat and then adding stuff to it. They're getting 100% meat and adding stuff to it. It was a sham. But the problem is Taco Bell, as proud as they can possibly be, is sitting there going, our meat is 88% meat. No, your meat is 100% meat. Your seasoned meat is 88% beef. But the fact that some idiot sat around and said, whoa, let's make a rumor, Taco Bell answered it. If I was Taco Bell, I would have came out and go, here's a cow, shot it and ground it up right there. Here's our beef. I'm kidding, I wouldn't have shot it. I would have ground it up live. Okay, I wouldn't. I'm just saying that there's just too much nitpicking. However, when you can make, next time, ladies and gentlemen, you have a party, and you're sitting there looking at, you need to cook, maybe two turkeys for a Christmas dinner, or a turkey and a ham, I want you to think back that you could call Nestle up and they could make you 5 tons of spaghetti and meatballs and a hearty tomato sauce in an hour. So, and you're yelling because you got to make a turkey and a ham? What's wrong with you? These people have perfected food stuff. An hour! That's just amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. Five tons in an hour. Whew. Okay, here's something. The headline, I want to do this before we get to the top of the hour. The headline is Apple obesity heart risk theory goes pear-shaped. That's the headline. So now everyone knows that there's this apple body and pear body and the banana body. Which is kind of weird, and there's that squash body, which is funky as well. But we're only talking about apples and pears right now. The new research is challenging medical notions that apple-shaped people with more fat around their waist are at higher risk of heart attacks and strokes than pear-shaped people with fatter bottoms and hips. So the study of 220,000 people confirmed that being obese is a major risk factor for heart disease. Okay? But found the distribution of fat on the body has no impact on that risk. So, what they're saying is all the pear people that were sitting around going, it's all good, it's all down here, it's not near my heart. Or the apple people going, no, it's all good, it's down here, it's around my waist. Or the squash people going, no, it's all good, it's all near my ankles. Just walk around. That's the farthest my fat can be from my heart. Anyway, the whole reason they are saying this is they're simply saying if you're fat, you have a higher risk of heart disease. That's it. Now, how many people knew that? Everybody. How many people knew that? The contributing factors for most obesity is not eating correctly. Correct? So, the other thing that happens when people like this going to doctors. Doctors suddenly get on them and say, hey, we got to make sure that you have this, this, and this all in check as well. Remember, 1 in 4 Americans are on a statin. Now, after this study was published and everyone comes out and goes, yeah, 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 apple, pear, whatever, squash, it don't matter. They say this. The results suggest that while monitoring weight and fat levels may be important to try to get people to change their lifestyles, remember, to try to get people to change their lifestyles. Do what now? So you're saying that doctors could use the weight and fat as a reason to kind of prod people to change their lifestyle, to be different, right? It says the results suggest that while monitoring weight and fat may be important to try to get people to change their lifestyles, but the best predictors of heart risk are measures of blood pressure, cholesterol, and diabetes. Okay. The study took weight, hip, waist, blood pressure, cholesterol, and other key data from more than 220,000 adults who had no previous history of heart disease and traced them for a decade. During that time, 14,000 of them had heart attacks. Now, I don't know about you, but I need to do some math. 220,000 divided by 14,000. Says 15%. Is that right? No, wait, that's wrong. Got to do it the other way. 14,000 divided by 220,000. That's 0.06%. So 6% of these people had heart attacks. Okay? And they showed that blood pressure and cholesterol, it shows that if the conventional risk factors had already been measured, then measures of levels of fat add very little. What? So you're saying that blood pressure and cholesterol could have everything to do with it instead of obesity? The study showed that basically all obesity types are as broadly bad as each other when it comes to heart health, but then it says that the conventional risk factors are what the measures of fat add very little risk. So which one leads to the other? Does the blood pressure, cholesterol, and history of diabetes lead to obesity, or vice versa? Or is one product creating all of this? Maybe engineered oils of some sort. I don't know. But again, 220,000 people, 14,000 of them have heart attack or stroke. Not a whole bunch. People are getting healthier and healthier and healthier. In fact, there's one more study that says alcohol is a common denominator in pancreatic cancer. They followed 1 million people for 20 years or so, and 6,847 of them got pancreatic cancer. Well, of those 6,847 of them, if you drank, you had a 36% more chance of having the pancreatic cancer. Meaning they took, out of the million people, they took the 6,847 that got pancreatic cancer, and they divided it by all the people who drank and showed that that's the more of them had pancreatic cancer, 36% more risk of pancreatic cancer. So while the headline is, drinking gives you a third more risk, the headline should also say, but your big risk is 0.006, 0.006% of getting it in the first place. Did they look at the people's food intake? No. No. Didn't talk about that at all. Just talked about the fact that they cannot separate smoking from drinking. because most people smoke, drink, and vice versa. And I say to them, what? I am drinking a red wine at this moment, but I don't have a cigar yet. So, we have two studies out with, you know, big headlines and big news, but when you read deeper into the stories, which you will not get the deep stuff off the news, you'll get the headline, and you'll get the first paragraph, but you won't get the depth of the story where they say, you know what, when we measured cholesterol, blood pressure, and diabetes, fat didn't matter. But the headline is, fat puts you at risk for heart attack. I'm watching these people. I'm watching them like a hawk. There's lots of things coming down the pike. Over and over and over, we see it. Lots of health articles. More and more health articles being promoted in like little snippets that do not give you the full story. And that's why you listen here to Fix the Family, Fix America. Because we do the in-depth reading and reporting on exactly what they're trying to say, and then also telling you kind of who's trying to say it. Remember how we had the story last week, where the guy had stock in what he was trying to say. The guy had stock in his outcome. Okay? All right, before we get to the top of the hour, I'm gonna break mold here real quick. I'm going to break mold here real quick. No, I'm not. I was going to talk about the mom of the week. I'm so amazed at this mom of the week that I wanted to spend time on it. I really did. But I'm going to bring her up after another topic. Bring her up after another time. I got two top tens. I'm coming back like a David Letterman kind of show. Two top tens. One of them's going to be at the end because I've got two massively incredible articles that we're going to talk about for a long time. Two topics we're going to talk about for a long time in the next hour, and I want you to miss it. But first, I want to thank each and every one of you for listening. I am your host, Jack Hatfield, on Fix the Family, Fix America Radio. And I know that you know that we're out to make you a success. We're out to make you whatever you want to be. And we're out to bring forth all of the success that was inside you before you were born. We're going to tap into your natural success principles. I need you to follow me on Twitter so you can get all this news. When I get all this news, that's right, you can get it instantaneously by following me on Twitter, twitter.com/Jack Hatfield. And, of course, follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/TheJackHatfield. You can find me at naturalsuccessprinciples.com. You can listen to this show right there. You can get my blogs, my tweets, everything. You can stay in touch with me, and we can be best friends forever. Big old BFFs. That's what we need to do. But In doing so all of this week, and you start listening to my tweets, and you start becoming a better person, and you saying, you know what, I'm tired. I need to do something for myself, for my family, for my nation, for my planet. I'm gonna create this business that's gonna fix this problem. Right? Maybe you want to come out with the best cell phone in the world. Maybe you want to come out with celery that cuts itself. I don't know. But whatever it is, there's one place that can help you do it. one place that can help you do it faster, quicker, and look better doing so, and that's sandhill.sohooffice.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not kidding. These people are incredible, these things. I'm sorry, I was looking at the top 10 worst foods. These people are so incredible. They can help you. You walk in there and you go, you know what? I got this business and I call it this. And they'll create a logo for you. You know, you can come in, you say, I got this magazine. I need help. They'll create the cover for you. And then they'll print it. You can come in and go, I got this idea for this website, and they can create that for you. That's right. Anything that the small business and entrepreneur needs, this is where you go. You want something printed? They got it. You need a suite for your business? They got it. You know, they don't have P.O. boxes. They got suites. So you can send FedEx packages there. They have it all. They create it all, they have it all, and they do it all, and they help you do it smarter, better, and faster than you ever could by yourself. If you are at any point thinking that you could be better doing something for yourself, then the first step you have to take is sandhill.sohooffice.com, where you can be a better person tomorrow. Your business can be a better business tomorrow, and everything gets better instantaneously once you contact these people. They want you to succeed just as bad as I do. And that's why I'm involved with them. They want you to succeed. If they can help you succeed, then they succeed. Good friend of mine, I'm actually shaking his hand, Zig Ziglar, said if you can help as many people as you possibly can succeed, then you yourself will be a success. And that's what they're doing, and that's what we're doing here on Fix the Family, Fix America. Fix America! Now, I'm thinking of all the places I could possibly put Miss Adele's Magnificence Minute starting next week. I can't wait. Wait till y'all hear her Magnificence Minute on Fix the Family, Fix America, where you will hear the great English accent, Irish accent. She has kind of a both accent, really, of her. We had her on 2 weeks ago on an interview, so you can scroll down on naturalsuccessprinciples.com and listen to that show again. You need to do that. And if you are really froggy, you can go get both my books on Amazon, Blessed with Tragedy and Natural Success Principles. Greatly appreciate if you do that. And the number one thing, your homework, of course, is going and tell everyone that they need to listen to the show so that we can quadruple our listenership again this week. And I can't thank you enough for doing it. We're going to talk about some major, major stuff here on the flip side. I cannot thank you enough for listening. This is Fix the Family, Fix America Radio, the fastest growing family talk show in all the world. Get ready. Second hour coming up.
Welcome to the Fix the Family, Fix the America Radio Show!
Hey folks, it's time for the show!
Welcome! And now, here's your host for all this craziness, Jack Hatfield.
contact sandhill.sohopestop.com, and they can start tonight. You can email them tonight, tell them what you're doing, and they will help you tomorrow. It can start right now tonight. Thank you for being here on the second hour of Fix the Family, Fix America, the fastest growing family talk show in all the world. That's because we do it right. Because we do it by putting the world right in order. But to put the world in order, we must first put the nation in order. To put the nation in order, we must first put the family in order. And to put the family in order, we must first cultivate our personal life. And that's what we do here with our exclusive 4+1 Fathering, Make a Difference Mothering, Pull Through Parenting, and Finally Reveal Your Success. Our plus one is disease in the diet, where we are working on stopping degenerative diseases from affecting your family. So that is how we're doing it here. My name is Jack Hatfield. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Jack Hatfield, and Facebook me. Like it. You can like two things. You can like the Jack Hatfield and Fix the Family. You can like both of those. We greatly appreciate it. We are about to start an entire whole new depth to our social media, so look out for that. So it's good to get on board now, so that we can get started. You're going to be seeing videos from me on the Facebook. You obviously, my tweets are coming fast and furious as soon as I get the big news. So get on board with that as fast as you can, and keep up track to read some of the stuff. Just so people, I've had multiple emails ask, you know, you always say my chapter, this book, that book. There's two books, Blessed with Tragedy and Natural Success Principles. And the website is Natural Success Principles. And we're going to be announcing a couple other websites soon where you can get mentoring and other things happening from there, and lots of other things ready for you. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, we are fast and furiously growing as much as we can by your demands. We are doing it to keep up with you. And we can't thank you enough for being here and listening and joining in and becoming part of the Fix the Family, Fix America world. And again, our heart goes out to Japan. Fix the Family, Fix Japan is definitely part of it, because we are the family fix the world, and we're just amazed at the attitude, the can-do, and the decorum that is displayed by victims of the Japanese earthquake and tsunami, and our hearts go out to them. Now, generations, okay? Generations have been defined by what happens mostly in that generation. You got the 60s, you got the sexual revolution, the anti-war persona. Got several things happening there. 70s, you got basically, I guess, the music and drug revolution. 80s, the free spirit, drug, high growth, high stakes revolution. 90s, I don't really know what the 90s were called. And here we are in the O's. No, the O's, I don't know what the O's were called either. We're now in the teens, or at least the ones. I don't know what this generation would be called. Anyway, you know, you have several people calling the World War II generation the smartest generation. You have your look and history tells of what generations do and what they bring to the world. And of course, the media loves to expose the bad side of every generation, not the good side. But could we be creating what is soon to be going to be known as the dumbest generation? One author does believe so. She was talking about, her name is Patrice Lewis. She was talking about her daughter, age 12, saw a movie called The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Now, right there, that word in the title cuts some people off from even going to see the movie. because it's got four syllables in it. The plot has a Victorian-era man, played by Sean Connery, who gathers together the most famous characters in literature, including Dorian Gray, Dr. Jekyll, Tom Sawyer, Captain Nemo, on a secret mission to fight a technological madman. The daughter loved the movie so much, she decided she wanted to read all the books concerning the characters. So she's read The Portrait of Dorian Gray, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. You know, all the volumes are in their personal library. So she simply goes and grabs these books off the shelf and reads them as she wishes. This is a 12-year-old seeing a movie and wanting to read more. How many times have you heard that story? God, that happens every day, doesn't it? No, it doesn't. So, she also goes on to say she sometimes can hear other children read out loud. And the boy comes from a stable, intact family. They see there's nothing wrong with his intelligence, except for he, for all intents and purposes, is illiterate. He can read, but barely, and he has no comprehension of what he's reading. And this puzzled her and concerned her for the longest time. How could a kid from such a great family, quote, quote, be effectively unable to read? Then it dawned on me, books are not part of his life. There are none to be found in his home. He lives in a cyber world of technological excess. Mom on a phone, I on Twitter. Just settled down for our long flitter. I don't know how I just evoked a Christmas poem. Anyway, she's been thinking about the contrast between her daughter's devouring of the classics versus the other child's functional illiteracy, because she's reading a book called The Dumbest Generation by Mark Barrowland. Who argues that this generation's wired in and connected lifestyle is leaving young people the unable to think, work, read, or form real relationships. What do you think? I kind of agree. You've got people that think a colon open parenthesis, just simply saying, I'm happy. You've got words and letters for entire sentences. BRB. I guess you can't, your thumbs don't work and can't type out the whole be right back. She goes on to say, originally these modern technological marvels were hailed as cutting edge intellectual stimulants for young minds, but this has not turned out to be the case. Because if the young has acquired so much digital proficiency, and if digital technology exercises their intellectual faculty so well, excuse me, I don't have a cough button hit just then because I coughed. I have an applause button. How about for coughing? Back to this question. If the young have acquired so much digital proficiency, and if digital technology exercises their intellectual faculty so well, then why hasn't knowledge and skill levels increased accordingly? Why aren't test scores going up in public schools? Aren't public schools getting spent technology like it's no tomorrow? Every kid gets a laptop? There's now a commercial on, if you win a laptop, they'll give one to an African child. So everybody's got a laptop. So why isn't the knowledge and skill levels increasing accordingly? If the information age solicits quicker and savvier literacies, why do so many new entrants into college and work end up in remediation? How come so many college students are now having to go through remedial courses when they're coming up through with all this technology? Instead of chalkboards, they got these wiper boards that they don't even use ink anymore. These smart boards. Then you got laptops. You got calculators. Got your cell phone. But children go into remediation right into college. Because the author of The Dumbest Generation, Bauerlin, describes the constant and ever-improving technology as prosthetic, a chilling term when applied to the minds of children and young adults. That's right, like a prosthetic leg now is a prosthetic mind. They don't think unless something is telling them to think. That's sad when you sit there and think about that. It's amazing when you think about that. Now, most of the early and highly anticipated benefits of technology on the intellects of students have turned out to be negative. So much so that some schools are actually disconnecting and discouraging the use of these smart boards and other digital media they had encouraged with such high hopes 5 years before in an effort to unplug kids and increase test scores. Schools are now doing this. Now, most of you know that there is an absolute 100% fact that homeschooled children most of the time read faster and on a higher grade level than people in public schools. I'm not knocking public schools. I'm not saying homeschooling is the best thing in the world. Your choice. What I am saying is it is a fact that that is a normal, common knowledge. Because you don't have the smart boards. You have the one-on-one attention in a homeschool. And then you have the reading and the writing and the arithmetic, the three R's, the things that aren't taught anymore in public schools. They're taught, but they're taught in different ways now. They're taught in different ways than kids having to write an essay. Now you type an essay, or steal an essay, or buy one. The trouble, apparently, is while kids are frighteningly savvy when it comes to all electronic media, those skills do not translate into actual knowledge. They do not retain the material they study. When the fifth grade teachers assign a topic, the kids proceed like this. Go to Google, type keywords, download three relevant sites, cut and paste passages into a new document, add transitions of their own, print it, turn in. Model information retrieval, knowledge formation, and the material passes from web to homework paper without lodging to the minds of the students. That, my friends, is a scary thought. Now, one of my specialties is to do half of that, but at the end of it, have incredible knowledge formed in my head from what I've read and learned. That's why I have a company that actually will find out anything for you. If you have a question, we'll find the answer. Doesn't matter what it is, we'll get you the answer. If you say, I need to have a 20 by 20 foot stage, 10 feet tall, in 7 days, we get it done for you. We are the can-do company. You can ask us any question you want at Natural Success Principles. Jay Hatfield at Natural Success Principles. Send an email to anything with any question or any problem you have. We'll solve it. We'll tell you how much it is to solve it right up front. But we get it done. In fact, most people don't even ask. They just say, I need this solved now. And we go get it done. We are the can-do company. Now, contrast what I just said, when the cut and paste and Google this and that and transitions, print up, turn in, contrast it to the papers all of us had to write. Us older people. Actually, you older people. Not me. Anyway, you had to go in a public school system and you're assigned a topic. You then go to the library and you found several books on the subject. You had to read the books, hand copy the relevant passages, rewrote passages in your own words, organize the paper into a cohesive logical sequence, maybe typed it up, maybe had to rewrite it, and then turn it in. I guarantee you some of you still remember papers you wrote. That's a lot of work. Today's essay is no work. In fact, you could give me a topic and you ask for an essay and I could go buy one for $15 and give you a thesis on it in about 20 minutes. And I've never even looked at the subject. How much knowledge does that instill on me? And for those parents who didn't know that your kid could do that, if you have unfettered internet access and your kid suddenly comes out with a 30-page thesis, and you go, ah, little Jimmy, you did so well. I knew you were locked in your room alone with all that loud music doing all this work. But no parents listening to this show has that issue. I know you know parents that have that issue. So get over there and fix that. So it is shocked that you can look at intact, educated families, lose sight of the fact that your child can't read. And it's equally shocking that a family that has all those things appears unaware of the reasons why their child can't read. The family's love affair with technology continues unabated, and they applaud their children's media intelligence. Adolescents adapt to technology, advance in the collective mind, expand the storehouse of knowledge. Okay? They engage in creativity, criticism, dialogue, and competition, kindling thought, not deadening it. Why then should bibliophiles and traditionalists carp so much? Right? Why am I even talking about this? If adolescents adapt in technology and they can program your VCR, well, VCR, program your DVR in 2 seconds, they can log on and give you a Facebook profile in 10 seconds, why then are we worried about it? Why are traditionalists getting so upset? Well, this is the quandary we find ourselves if we refuse to indulge our children with the latest electronic marvels, because what we're seeing with an adolescent obsession with Facebook, texting, iPads, Game Boys, and internet, the answer becomes clear. An increase in intelligence and knowledge has not materialized. In other words, our media savvy, technologically adept, super-duper nerd-herd group of youths are becoming the dumbest generation. It seems the old-fashioned fuddy-duddy way of doing things has merit after all. Our child does 100 math problems first thing in the morning. Then she has to do a writing paper every day. Then she has to read and answer questions. She has to grasp what she's reading every day. Now, Bauer learns concerns that the ignorance of our young people will result in a nation sliding into apathy. I will add, do you think that this could be a plan? Is the plethora of electronic marvels designed specifically to distract the younger generation from developing an interest in civics or politics or history? It makes you wonder, doesn't it? Into what kind of world will my homeschooled, literate daughter be launched into? This author thinks, asked the same question. Will her daughter and my daughter be square pegs in a round hole? Indifferent to the exploits of Hollywood dribble, unconnected with friends through Facebook or Twitter, deprived of cell phones because they don't need them, what kind of freaks will our kids be when they leave for college? Well, this author says, on the other hand, because of her passion for books, our older daughter was invited by our local library to submit a resume, and she now looks forward to a summer of employment, encouraging kids to love reading. Younger daughter continues to volunteer at a county animal shelter where the director can't get enough over her work ethic and enthusiasm. Both girls have a solid grounding in civics, history, math, science, writing, and geography the old-fashioned way. So whatever freaks our girls turn out to be, they will not be the dumb ones. They will be the literate ones, and if that makes them freakishly different, so be it. Parents, you have to grasp what your children are doing every day. In fact, you have to pay attention that they're not going to become mind-numbing. Their mind will not be a prosthetic mind. It has to be an active mind. Now, my audience is not going to have this problem. My audience is fixing themselves. They're putting their family in order, and we're putting this nation in order. But I know you know someone who needs a good swift kick in the pants. And that's why you're going to tell them tomorrow to listen to this show. And I don't care when tomorrow is, but you tell them tomorrow when you get up, you need to start listening to this show. You need to follow this guy. You need to use technology. Mind-numbing technology is Twitter, and follow this guy, Jack Hatfield, twitter.com/Jack Hatfield. You need to go on Facebook and friend him, the Jack Hatfield. You need to friend, fix the family. You need to do all of this. Right after I just said don't do that. You need to use both. The people that can read a book and Twitter, powerful people. It is amazing the illiteracy I see on a daily basis. It is amazing the amount of entrepreneurs and small businesses that I attempt to help when they bring in a paper or an ad. The grammar is incorrect, or spelling is incorrect. And I help them, and then I teach them, and they learn. They're wanting to learn at this point. They now understand that what they have put on the burner for their first half of their life is now very, very, very important. And if you want to become a success, the details are important. And those details start with reading and communicating correctly. Become a freak with me, and we'll go buck freak crazy. We'll be the literate ones that also tweet. I know you can, and I know you will. Lots of questions from that last monologue. Lots of questions. What are the kids that can read going to look at when they get out there? Is the gap, socioeconomic gap, going to widen because of this problem? Is the healthcare gap going to widen because of this problem? Is the job growth gap going to rise because of this problem? Lots of questions. Only one answer. Read, learn, understand, and remember. That's how you gain knowledge, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. That was an interesting monologue, ladies and gentlemen. Let me tell you, that was big time. That puts a lot of questions in the head reading about all that. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to talk about a lady, a couple, doing something what I really, really feel is highly despicable. And then you have to sit back and you look at the good people in the world that are actually facing these traumatic experiences with all the heart and courage that they can muster. And then you've got people like this. Cop's wife. Okay? Cop's wife in 2005 came down and told people that she had a very large problem. She had stage 4 cancer and she was beginning treatment. In autumn 2005, for the next 4 years, they took in charitable contributions from friends, neighbors, and church. Some of the donations were made by direct deposit to this family on a bi-monthly basis, helping these two get through this troubled time. In fact, they had events, big, humongous events. Wore T-shirts like Run, Ride, Walk, or Crawl. Family's name, last name was Crawl. C-R-A-L-L. People around them opened their hearts, their wallets, and their time to help this family with this lady going through stage 4 treatment for cancer. She reported her cancer was ongoing, but in 2009, she just wasn't showing the effects that cancer treatment survivors show. She said she reported stage 4 in 2005. That's supposed to be fatal, and in 2009, she's still, talking about it. Someone even asked, hey, you got cancer? She says, yeah, here's a document right here for the Colorado Rocky Mountain Cancer Clinic saying I've had cancer and I'm being treated for cancer. And they were like, oh, okay. Okay. Well, they found out those papers weren't real. That's right. They found out she never had cancer. Her husband, Richard, and her went around to an awful lot of sporting events, parties, with the money that they were being given, all a part as just showing her one last good time. I mean, she's a cancer patient. Goodness. Right? Well, when they looked into that, several neighbors also reported Carl asking for pain medication on occasions. Found out she didn't have cancer and she's taken all of this money and just partied with it. Almost $60,000. Free money from the open hearts of people trying to help. From police stations. Richard obviously has resigned from the Lakewood Police Force. And then they look back and they see what Carl spent the money on. It does show that she has a lengthy criminal history, a little bit, including charges for obtaining drugs via fraud. She has 24 charges of obtaining or possessing drugs, having been arrested in 2008 and 2009 with fraud, counterfeiting, and obtaining a controlled substance via fraud. Now, how are you arrested in 2008 and 2009 by the police when your hubby's a cop. In May 2010, she was charged with 7 counts possessing, distributing, and manufacturing drugs. What? And now she's being tacked on theft and charity fraud. What callousness of a woman and what bumbleness of a man to sit around and say, we're going to fool people into thinking we have stage 4 terminal cancer. People all over this country and all over the world fight these diseases really with all the courage they can muster. I speak to some of them all the time. I speak to a lot of people that heal their own cancer. The courage that they show is amazing. And this lady had the unmitigated gall to say she had it when she didn't, just to get free money. And the husband's in on it, ladies and gentlemen. In on it. That's stunning to me. I mean, having my mom go through it, having many people that I know go through it, and you're going to come and tell your friends and family you haven't, and it'll just be a liar. Despicable. She gets sentenced this Friday. Now, excuse me, on April 28th. She admitted it on Friday, and she will be sentenced April 28th. I don't know about you, but I don't think she should come out of there. All she has to do is go into a new world, new place, new people, and look at them in the eye and say the same thing. Because if she did it once, she can do it again. By the way, this genius of a lady is only 31 years old. I could not find if they have children. I could not find that out. Let's hope not. Let's hope not. I mean, that's just despicable. I can't say any more to the story. Here's another a boo hiss for you, ladies and gentlemen. Another boo hiss for you. In fact, it's our mom of the week. I can't call it parents of the week because mom simply had her boyfriend over. So it's not, well, semi-parents. I mean, that's the acting parents at the time. Anyway, everyone listening, every parent listening to this show, Fix the Family, Fix America, knows potty training is pretty tough. I mean, it's tough. There can be accidents, mistakes. And I have to brag here at this point. I've got to actually brag. My daughter, I believe, has had only 2 mistakes. One of them was in the bed during night, and only 1 mistake in her pants. So really only one mistake. She just couldn't hold it any longer, and she cried about it that she couldn't hold it any longer. We couldn't get to a toilet fast enough. So in reality, it's not really a mistake. It was just, you know, untrained ability to hold and understand what that pain's about. So that's my brag on the world, how amazing my daughter went through potty training. But now there's a lot of people that say potty training has been very frustrating. There's a lot of people that say, I don't know what happened. I just had to keep going over and changing pants. And eventually I just said, don't wear pants around the house. I've actually had a parent tell me they just stopped putting pants on their children during the potty training phase. Now, some people swear by that. You don't put any pants on. As soon as they start, you take them there. It's like a dog. As soon as they start, you take them outside. I don't know. It's very strange to me. All we did was talk about doing it. And then when it was time, she said, it's time. My daughter looked at us and said, I don't want to wear diapers. Ready to be a big girl. But anyway, I can empathize with any frustrations of parenting, obviously. Well, Robin Grinke, 26-year-old mother, obviously having a hard time with her son, her 3-year-old son, in potty training. Okay? Because the 3-year-old son wet his pants, like potty trainers sometimes do. She went over and, looked at him and saw that he wet his pants. And then her boyfriend, Steven, was over at the house as well and saw that the 3-year-old child wet his pants. And what would normally parent-child issue where you just talk about it and fix the situation. They felt that this was obviously the boy wetting his pants was very bad. And so they beat the boy for more than an hour. They threw him around the room, spanked him, and punched him. And just continued beating him for more than an hour. Son obviously, hopefully learned from this. Enough for the parents, for the mom and boyfriend to sit down and get a pizza delivered and watch a movie. The mom called 911 around 5 a.m. to say her son was wheezing and she couldn't sleep. She couldn't sleep. Mom and boyfriend admitted they took turns beating the boy for more than an hour. In other words, they beat him until they got tired and tag-teamed off. Now, I understand she called around 5 a.m. to say that the boy, her son, was wheezing and she couldn't sleep. This is after beating him for an hour, then watching a movie and eating a pizza, getting a pizza delivered, watching a movie, and then finally trying to go to sleep. That puts the kid up around 2 a.m. max. What's going on? Can you imagine what this child endured up until this point? Can you imagine that the two parents are now sitting there going, well. If the mom felt that was necessary to beat the boy for an hour, then imagine that the mom's probably thinking that she'd be better off with her new boyfriend without all the drudgery of the child. Not only is she a mom that could kill, a boyfriend that can kill her own child, afterwards they can sit down and eat and watch a movie. That's an amazing part. That's amazing to me. What punishment would be fitting for this couple, ladies and gentlemen? There probably isn't. I mean, this is Mom of the Week personified. I mean, this is amazing. I read this and I can't fathom. Not only did you go crazy and kill your child, you then afterwards had no remorse whatsoever and you had a pizza delivered and watched a movie. By the way, they were visiting Florida. No word to where they're from. But it said while they were visiting Florida. No word of where they were visiting either. But thank goodness there was no one else there to tag team off. And beat the boy. Could have beat him for more than an hour. And then to call 911 to say, I can't sleep because my child's wheezing. I could go on and on about the evil for a while. I've got to stop. I will. Stuff. Yes. Okay, let's put that to rest for a minute, because if you try to think about it, your mind will explode, and it won't be pretty. So let's look at, let's do two top tens here in our waning moments here. Two top tens. I don't have the card. Wait a minute, I got this. Two top tens. Top ten, hold on, man, two top tens. 10 habits that can ruin your appearance. We need to work on... people's appearance. I have a lot of people go, you know what, I got wrinkles, I try to eat healthy, but I've got problems. And then there are ways and diet, exercise, and grooming that can ruin your appearance. Okay? And so let's go into what this says and see if any of it's viable and true and all that good stuff. So here we go. Using whatever product you can find to put on your face, number 10. All right, many men will buy whatever happens to be available to wash their faces. In fact, if you watch shows such as like Mike and Molly, he goes and buys the 7-gallon shampoo, conditioner, face wash, and mouthwash all in one, also dishwash, all in 1-gallon container. That's probably not good for your skin, just saying. Anything that can do 10 things and clean out the oil in your car, probably not good for your face. All right, another thing that would take you down, too many diuretics without drinking enough water. You know, you're supposed to drink 8 glasses of water a day, which is not even true. You're supposed to drink as much water as necessary for you to not be thirsty. Excuse me, cough button, hit it. I don't have one. Oh, yeah. drink as much water as your body requires. I'm joking. Let me have a, I have no more stuff. So, you have to drink more water if you ingest diuretics. So, you need to figure out what diuretics are. Well, they're substances like caffeine and alcohol that cause your body to secrete a little more water than you would be. So, given that your body is 70% water, it's essential to stay hydrated to maintain proper cell functioning and get a fit body and bright skin. So, if you're going to drink coffee... or 3, or 9, or 20, or what doesn't matter. Just make sure you drink enough H2O. I agree completely. Water is essential. This one says dry shaving will not help you, so I don't even know what that means. If you can seriously grab a razor and just put it to your skin and shave it without water, moisture, cream, emollient of some sort, first of all, you're amazing. Second of all, it's not helping you at all. Another thing, touching your face. Don't touch the face. It's not only a rule for my child, it's a rule for you too. Guess how many dirt, bacteria, and grease, and all kinds of things that make you sick get onto your face when you touch your face. I touch other people's mouses and keyboards a lot. I hold other people's money in my hand a lot. You think it'd be real good for me to suddenly go from some stranger's mouse or keyboard or money to my eyeball? No, I don't think so. Oh, here's another. This is one of the top 10 dumb things in here. It says exercising just to eat more. People saying I like to exercise because I like to eat whatever I want. Well, that's not really going to work in the long run. But let me tell you that when you do work out, you do need more food. So, but that is that as a top 10 way to ruin your appearance, it's not really one of them. And of course, you knew processed foods, sunscreen, and drinking too much and smoking would be on this list. Very easy to always hear that. Diuretic on the alcohol is dehydrating. So it will make fine lines appear much more pronounced the following day. So make sure you drink enough water before you go to bed. I'm kidding. Not kidding. Chugging down processed foods has repercussions on your body. What they're talking about is steer clear of anything that contains flour, sugar, margarine, or ingredients that have weird chemical names. Wow. I agree completely with those four items. Then it says, of course, sunscreen. You know our stance on that. People that stay out in the sun in indigenous regions of this planet have no skin cancer to be seen. The sun can't be the cause. And then, of course, smoking. There's over 4,000 plus chemicals in a cigarette, 51 of which are known carcinogens. Now, that is because there's so many additives to cigarettes, so that's very important. So those are your top 10 habits to ruin your appearance, ladies and gentlemen. Top 10 habits to ruin your appearance. Now, let's do another top 10 for fun. Top 10 worst foods. These are hilarious. These are amazing top 10 worst foods in the world, okay? This person actually went and traveled and ate these 10 items, and these are the top 10 he's encountered so far. Okay? Number 10, dendi oil in Brazil. So if you go to Brazil and they get you dendi oil, this dislike is purely subjective, he says. So this is not very bad. Dendi oil is the cooking medium for much of the fried food in the Bahia region of Brazil. It is extracted from local palm trees, and the origins of it used to go back to cooking methods of African slaves. Now, the taste of anything cooked in the oil is strong, but he was unlikely to get that far, as the smell of the oil is reminiscent of an unwashed armpit. So the smell is probably the lack thereof right there that's going to turn you off of the dendi oil. Now, Kopi Ewok in Sumatra. Now, he says he has never tried this one. And it's not because he has any great fear of drinking something that has already passed through another animal's digestive system and then collected by rummaging around in its feces, but because coffee, he can't have coffee, he's allergic. What they do is they go around and search through the feces of the Asian palm civet. I believe it's a monkey. And they add it to coffee to make the most expensive brew on earth. You think about that for a minute. Number whatever I'm on. 8, I believe. Fertilized duck or chicken egg develop into its embryonic. Boil it and serve it with chili vinegar and you have balut. The street food of discerning Filipinos in the Philippines. There is a strict etiquette to eating balut. You first sip the liquid from the shell, chew the remaining contents, making sure to crack the bones for good measure, and toss the shell on the ground. Let me describe what this is again. It's a fertilized duck or chicken egg that develops until it's embryonic. That means it's like a little chicken or duck. Number 7, roasted camel out of Morocco. Butchers in the famous city of Casablanca advertise the origins of camel meat. They're selling by hanging the grinning heads of the animals outside their stands. Nearby stalls are set up to grill your purchase for you in kebab or sandwich form. The meat is tough and gamey. The locals seem to like it. But this person said you have to chew until your teeth are almost gone. So in reality, the chewing was the problem there. In Japan, where our heart goes out to them, they have in trendy sushi bars a small white sack of slimy unpleasantness. This person took one taste of this item and threw up, in which the Japanese businessmen around him laughed a great deal. What it was it was cod sperm. And he doesn't want to touch it again. He also has an issue with... There's a country, he doesn't even list the country, but there's a country that has eats dog. And he said, for the record, the meat tastes like gamey pork. But once he found out that cooks like to beat the dog while it's still alive, believing the added adrenaline in the meat will give virility to those who eat it, he could not stomach to continue eating. And I could not either. And PETA should be very upset about what I just said. Beat the dog while it's alive to get the adrenaline up so the meat tastes better. Wow. Number three of the top 10 worst foods in the world, cane rat out of China. He understands that some of the people in this Yangshou in southern China, which is a very low-resourced area of China. He understands that people have to use what resources are available for them to survive. However, the dried cane rat in a food stall in Yangshou was not a particularly welcome one. He felt obliged to try it, and it tasted as one would imagine a dried dead rat would taste. And he says, let us never speak of it again. Now, I, for one, am very, very... very open to eating, but on this list so far, maybe one item could be tasted. In Southeast Asia, they eat, number two, by the way, in Southeast Asia, they eat durian. Okay, signs varying the silhouette of a large prickly fruit with a line through it can be found on the doors of hotels, buses, and trains throughout Southeast Asia. They are a firm warning that the dreaded durian is not welcome. In other words, they're saying you cannot take the durian into here. Okay? On the doors of hotels, buses, and trains. And it's easy to understand why. Although the taste of the fruit is not at all unpleasant, the smell is enough to peel the skin off one's face from 100 paces away. So signs are all over there saying you cannot bring this in. And number one, A rag. They say Mongolians are born in the saddle, and die in the saddle, and it's certainly true that their horse is vital to their nomadic lifestyle. They eat plenty of horse meat and manage to consume almost 4 liters of mare's milk a day. Problem is, mare's milk is milk, horse milk, fermented in a cowhide container until it is a potent 5% alcohol by volume. That's a lot of fermentation for just some milk turning into alcohol, which is basically 5% is like a beer, like a Budweiser. And he says that he has to wonder how any of the Mongolians manage to stay in the saddle at all. I mean, amazing to me. Ladies and gentlemen, you are a part of one of the fastest growing families and family talk shows in the world. And I cannot thank you enough for being here, and I must give you your homework, and your homework is for everyone you see, tell them to listen to this show. Okay? I also want you to follow me on Twitter. Twitter.com/Jack Hatfield. And I also want you to get me on Facebook and like Fix the Family, Fix America. Facebook.com, The Jack Hatfield, and Facebook.com, Fix the Family. I need us to get in touch. We're about to do a big push on the social media. You can find us at NaturalSuccessPrinciples.com. And again, I had someone please repeat this. Books are available on Amazon. They are Blessed with Tragedy and Natural Success Principles. I can't thank you enough for listening. We've had a lot of fun today. Didn't have anything to do with Blue Screen Billy either. Maybe we'll hear from him again in a little bit. Hopefully he's stopped his little tirade. I won't stop mine, and he stops his. My switchboard operator lady recording apparently has gas. I don't know if y'all could hear that, but I heard it just fine. Anyway, follow me on Twitter. Get to us on Natural Success Principles. Send me an email. Again, we can find out anything and can solve any problem. If you need something, we can do it. Send us whatever you need. We greatly appreciate it. Now, get your work done. Get back home. Have a fantastic dinner. Kiss your children as they go to bed. Sit down and have a wonderful libation and have a good night. Kiss your significant other. And enjoy what you can, ladies and gentlemen. I am so happy that you've been here. Fix the Family, Fix America. I am your host, Jack Hatfield. Again, Twitter.com/Jack Hatfield, Facebook.com/TheJackHatfield. Get to it. Fix the Family, Fix America.